Welcome to another episode of the Broke Black Bougie Podcast, where we create candid conversations about life, money, and wellness for young black women. And it's relatable because we've all been there. Women have it to make it on less than our worth. We do so while setting trends, spreading black assness, and ultimately busting our tails to live our best life. It's me, Charlie, and Toya?
Eyes here.
I hear you. How's it going?
It's going. How's it going with you?
What's it to you? It's fine. It's been stormy around here. I don't really appreciate that. But, I've been trapped in the house. Or intentionally trapped in the house. Not really feeling like going outside unless I'm actually going somewhere else that, you know, can help me escape. I'll say that. Yeah. How's the weather up in Ra-Cha-Cha?
In Ra-Cha-Cha, it's rotten.
Let's look this up.
It's rotten. It hasn't been necessarily quote unquote bad, but you know, like, I feel like last summer was a whole washout.
Last summer?
No, I feel like this summer has been a whole washout.
Oh, yeah, because it's been more rain.
We only had a few days of here and there of nice weather, and, I mean, it was nice and sunny today, but, man, we got a little bit left over summer, but, man, really?
Oh, yeah, it could have been a lot better. No, I feel that.
Yes.
You know, it's interesting because, like, in recognizing Hurricane Ida and the impact of Hurricane Ida, especially on the East Coast and what people have been dealing with, you know, down south, especially looking at Louisiana as a whole, it's been a lot. And I think, like, how we've seen hurricanes just become stronger over time and how climate change definitely has shifted the weather patterns we experience, it's definitely something to take into, you know, consideration. Being in Albany for damn near going on 4 years now, the weather has been very much so consistent and less harsh than Rochester weather, but that's because Rochester is in Western New York, and it's also surrounding an entire fucking lake. So the heavier winter or the harsh winter storms hit differently in Albany, for instance, than it would in Rochester. And when it does get bad here, you know, things for the most part do shut down. But in Rochester, it's like, oh, we just operating like we normally operate because it's normal. It's normal to have winter 10 months out of the damn year. But sorry to hear that. It's very annoying. Yeah.
That right there just put a damper on my damn spirit. I just, 10 months out of the year, we're dealing with it. What the fuck? Well, that's how it feels, though. But, you know, like you know, just to kind of piggyback on what you were saying with Hurricane Ida, you know, and it really fell on the eve of Hurricane Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
You know, looking back at how many years, you know, they dealt with Hurricane Katrina and you had to get hit with something. Again, coincidentally, on the same exact day, you know, it was kind of so eerie. But then seeing how New York, as well as New Jersey, and those folks, how they dealt with a lot of the surreal things. I can't even wrap my head around it. You know, you seeing damn water coming through the damn buses, or you seeing water rushing through the train terminals. That was crazy.
Yeah, and outside of political science, I've always been really obsessed with, like, documentaries about weather and just, like, geography and, like, all of those things. And so to see how New York is being affected by these types of storms, we really have to take into consideration what the future of New York City will be, or cities that are surrounded by different bodies of water. Because technically, New York City is a bunch of islands that exist around water, right? And it is so easy to flood. And back in the day, you know, if we're looking at weather and weather patterns, New York never had to worry about shit like that. You know, like, no. I mean, yes, back in the day there were, what is that hurricane that hit in the 80s, I believe? I'm thinking.
I want to say whatever reason I did, but I'm probably so wrong right now.
You know, there was Hurricane Sandy, but there was also I think I'm referring to Hurricane Doria, like just hurricanes that have created like big damage to the point where it's like this is life-threatening damage, right? And yes, there has been a history of hurricanes to make landfall in New York in like the New Jersey area, so I don't want to erase that history, but I'm saying to the capacity of which people have to deal with the shit that they dealt with recently, like that type of damage. Oh my God. Yeah, that's just something we just have to think about, and why climate change matters, especially to Black and Brown communities who are often located in places that, you know, when climate change is occurring or when something of this magnitude happens, we're like in the direct eye of the tragedy.
Yeah. It's just a lot of shit that's kind of just so freaking, it's just a lot of stuff that's just triggering.
Yeah.
When you look at it, you know, like you said, we're either in eye of it, and meaning, you know, either in the physical eye of the storm, or we just fact that in the part of the storm where we just can't escape.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have the means to escape. You know, depending on, of course, other systemic things that have affected the way we make income. But it's just the fact that it's just troublesome. It's really, truly troublesome when you hear in New York City where people who were in basement apartments were killed.
Yeah.
Before we get to
them. Trapped in their cars.
Right there, just triggering.
Yeah. Literally trapped in their cars trying to survive. It's not okay. Anywho.
No, it's not.
I want to pivot into introducing what we're going to talk about on today's politicking segment. And, I know we've been going back and forth like about topics to discuss and things of that nature. And I was like, yo, let's just have a comfortable conversation, very loosely structured, surrounding being Black at work. And, you know, for those of you who have tapped into the Broke Black Bougie podcast before, we've had conversations or, you know, have briefly talked about being Black at work and the things that we've experienced. But this entire, you know, episode, I want to dedicate it to some of the things that we want to unpack. Maybe we never got a chance to unpack it. Maybe there were certain conversations we never, wanted to speak about, or we probably talked about, you know, on the low, on a hush hush, but these deserve to be surfaced because to be, why can't I talk today? These deserve to be definitely, you know, conversations that exist at the surface that we all can tap into, because surviving at work being Black, surviving at work being Black in a pandemic, is something I think more of us need to talk about. Now, we had a conversation about the great resignation and why people are walking away from these jobs, but I think we need to also talk about the experiences that make people get there. And so, in today's episode, we're going to be sharing our take, or really unpacking rather, some experiences that we face as young Black women within our industry. Me working in advocacy, social justice oriented places, and in politics, and Toya working in the healthcare industry. So let's get into it. All right, so can you, like, as we enter into this politics segment, I think I just want to, you know, ask a question. And, you know, I feel free also to just ask questions, because I think this is what this is about, right? Us bouncing off and unpacking some of the things we never really unpacked before. But can you give me a time where you recognized that the job you was working, even though it wasn't bullshit, it felt like bullshit? Can we just go there?
You know what's funny? I was literally sitting here thinking about, why is it that we have to make sure that we protect ourselves Why is it that we can't help but to protect ourselves while being Black at work?
Mm.
No other race has to do that. It's always us having to switch codes when we are the premise of our job, and then when we leave, we are our true selves. You can't even exist within who you are as an individual on your job, because obviously you want to create this quote unquote image of being someone who is professional at all times and making sure that you do your job the way that you're supposed to do it. But yet no one is really understanding how toxic that is for us to really be out here, you know, having to wear a different mask when we come into the presence of other individuals. Mm. And how often do we wear a different mask, you know? But I'm just saying, us as African Americans, we are always the ones that are having to protect our true identity.
Yeah, who we are, out of fear of not being accepted, out of being treated like shit, like, out of people ostracizing us, like, yeah.
For thinking the same exact thing.
Go ahead.
I just think, you know, with my previous employer, you know, it got to the point where, you know, after a while, and you know, being there for a period of time, like, my true individualism started to show. I wasn't willing to hold back from nobody. I didn't care about how you felt about me, because I knew that I put 110 in whatever I did at my position. And there was nothing that you could really tell me, because I knew how to do my fucking job from top to bottom, side to side, however you want to say it. And it just got to a point where I was like, listen, I'd be damned if I sit up here and try to let y'all, you know, try to eliminate my brightness as a Black woman in this position, or try to belittle me in any way, shape, or form. That's not going to happen.
And I think what's important to, like, recognize, too, is the different hierarchies that exist within the field of healthcare, right? Not all people who serve in the healthcare industry are treated with the same respect, from those who are in, you know, janitorial services to those who are transporters and you know, provide food to patients or cook or clean, to individuals who work in medical assistance services, or to any capacity serving, you know, in the front office of a medical office. Like, there is such a hierarchy that exists, and that's because racism also lives in these businesses, right? And the medical industry is essentially a business, and I think we don't talk about that enough. You know, there was a few articles published a few years ago, I want to say 2017, and also that have been reoccurring themes, right, where Black physicians have talked about the different masks that they've had to wear, you know, sometimes operating in a place that looks at them like they're not even the fucking doctor. And I'm like, if Black bodies who are MDs are being treated to this capacity, imagine those who don't even serve in that capacity.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that. Over the years, like I said, from my prior employer, there was, you can see the different shifts in hierarchy. Mm-hmm. You can see how people were more so based upon politics, and yet just the toxicity that I've seen, how people were treated in different positions. And like I said, you know, for one, what made me... I'm just gonna put it out there. A lot of people that I worked with left a bad taste in my mouth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
For those who I rock with, for those that know me and know truly who I am and what I stand for as an individual, I forever rock with them because they show me nothing but respect. And that was vice versa.
Right.
But for the others that felt like they were entitled, or that just because they had RN in front of their name, fuck that. I had respect for fucking individuals who were LPNs, and yet they were being discredited for them being LPNs. That was fucking, I left a bad taste in my mouth.
Mm-hmm.
A bad taste in my mouth. I said, at the end of the day, I don't give a fuck if there's an R or there's an LP in front of your damn nurse. You're still a nurse, right? And mm-hmm. I understand there are certain things that you can't necessarily quote unquote do that an RN can do, but yet you are technically still a nurse. But yet for some of those individuals that were RNs, they felt that they were just the cream of the crop, and yet LPN wasn't shit. That left a bad taste in my mouth. Because a lot of us, as black women, were in that position.
Right.
So off the rip, I was already disgusted with it. And a lot of those individuals, I looked at sideways. And I spoke my opinion in front of those individuals. I didn't give a fuck at that moment. I didn't.
It's so interesting because when you think about... When you think about the way that, like, whiteness exists, right, and like, let's just call it what it is. Traditionally, black bodies are in service work, right, and a majority of us comprise of lower level positions within the healthcare industry. And these are people who are just as essential as your doctors, as your nurses, as your whatever, insert fancy ass title here. But they often don't get the respect that they deserve or have the same compassion. And we're not even talking about exploitation, but that is something we should talk about, because financially they are not compensated for the work that they do. They are not financially compensated in a way that they can escape poverty. Let's call it what it is. And I think that's very important, because everyone wants to talk about the healthcare industry, but not all services are compensated the same. And I think COVID-19 was very telling of that, because what you see today is, you know, a lot of us are our frontline workers who are being exploited, who are not being paid well, who are considering whether or not they want to stay in this industry because of what they had to experience.
And I can't blame them for leaving. You know, but with that being said, let's kind of spiral back to you, you know, dealing with what you were dealing with at the time of the pandemic, and you had the work that you were doing. How was it for you being a black body dealing with whiteness?
I think that's a very full conversation, right? Because when I started working in... I went back to government work after shit fell through with that racial justice organization. And I was only there for 3 months, and I left after a blow up happened during our retreat, where we were in Calicoon, New York. We'll never forget it. You have to pass through like a traditional Jewish community to get there. It is like really rural upstate. What else? It's kind of like in the middle of nowhere. We were sent to this resort, and we were being exploited. We were treated like shit. We were surrounded by a whole bunch of white people at that resort who were being violent towards us. And it didn't help that our job was also violating the fuck out of us. And we were threatened and told that they weren't running a black nationalist organization. And we were told to essentially get the fuck out. And being threatened with poverty, especially as a black body, is not something I take fucking lightly. So I was like, you know, I need to resort to a place where I can do more policy work, And, you know, at least get paid my worth, because if you're going to treat me like shit, at least I'm going to get paid for it. And I went to what I was familiar with. So I started in September of 2019, and I literally started my first session working for the Senate before COVID hit. So it was like things were normal around January, February, then March came and like the world changed. And at the time when COVID was hitting, we were literally preparing internal documents for the majority Democratic conference about the number of COVID cases happening in every county in New York State. And on top of that, how many people had COVID, how many people were being hospitalized across the state. That document, you know, was also listing any executive orders that was happening, any places that were being shut down, like different localities that were being shut down based upon them having a massive outbreak. And right, who at that time, the National Guard was coming to places. Like, oh yeah, this is being shut down. We're gonna bring you groceries. We're gonna figure this out. It was like we were in a very like a Twilight Zone episode, and so every day when it would rotate in the office between, you know, who had to update the information on the document, I'm sitting there and I'm like, yo, this shit is growing to 22 pages, damn near 30 pages. We're putting the most recent information in the front, and daily we are submitting this to the conference. And as at the time Governor Cuomo, as he was saying, this is what we're going to do, this is how we're going to shut down things in phases, I was like, when are we going to shut down? Because I will never forget the day me and Asia, who also served as an analyst, came to work with a mask on before the mask mandate happened. Because we were so shaken by what was going on. And in the office at that time, two of our co-workers were looking at us crazy. They were non-black, and they were looking at us crazy because it was just like, why are y'all walking around with masks on? We work here, and there's information that we are not even receiving that we feel like it's imperative to knowing like what's going to happen. I understand we are public servants. I understand we sign our shit under policymakers. I understand that this is supposed to be a very important position. But the reality is we are being put in harm's way as this pandemic is happening, showing up into this space where we really should be home doing this work. And certain things started to click to us. So as every day we were getting places that were closing down, restaurants were closing down, retail stores that was unnecessary closing down. I mean, completely ghost town. We were still having to show up to work until one day we got, I think this was around like March 19th. We got the email we were looking for, and they were like, you know, effective immediately, go home. We'll figure it out. We're going to do remote work. Recognize that being that working remotely is a privilege. And it was like, we're just going home. And for the most part, I was able to produce work, but still, it was kind of one of those things like, you're a government employee, your whole entire life is supposed to be committed to this work. You know, you need to be up at this time, up at this time, up at this time. And it just felt like I was policing myself in the same way that I would police myself in the space of working in office, where many of my peers, they buckled down with their family members, either going to New York City, going to see their loved ones in Connecticut, you know, just having space. I felt like I didn't have the same flexibility, number one, because I needed to get my money together, because I was just like, you know, I don't think I'm gonna be at this job for a long time. And number two, I was just recognizing the strain that I didn't want to put, like, on you, for instance, coming back home. And also recognizing that, you know, two out of the three people back at home work in a hospital and have to be around people. So I just was trying to be realistic. But I would say what stuck out to me the most is how people talk all the time, like, if you're working in a nonprofit, how the nonprofit industrial complex exists. But there's also a white industrial complex that exists in politics that people don't speak enough to, right? The culture of the place, playing politics, certain games that exist, right? Certain ways you have to move in order to be accepted. There was a lot of shit that was happening throughout the pandemic that I did not feel comfortable with, whether it was the expectation of us working from home. We were one of the people who went home and didn't stay home. You know, we went home to work and we returned right back in office in June. And then towards the end of the year, we went right back home. But throughout the month of November, we were being forced to do voluntold work and travel across the state to do ballot counts in places where there were really tight races and sit in warehouses at the Board of Election. And ultimately, you know, through my journey, serving on board, being exposed to COVID-19, it was a lot. It was a lot to take in. And so as I just think about navigating whiteness, it showed up everywhere, even in places where it didn't have to, even in places where the interests of us as public servants should have been to protect ourselves, right? So that we could best of our ability serve and create the proper research and ensure that we have the right data, right? To talk about how COVID was affecting our communities. This shit was sad. We were watching it as it was happening. We were watching COVID spread across New York State. We were facing the data daily, and we also did not have a life. You know, so it was very hard and emotional for me, but I think working in the pandemic made me realize how I needed to find another position, and more so I needed to be able to identify sometimes I feel like I'm talking in circles, but I also needed to be able to identify what moving forward, what that looked like for me. Does that make sense? Like, what the pandemic taught me, and moving forward, how did I need to move? Like, what wasn't working for me in this job?
And I think, too, we come to realize that, you know, a lot of the shit that we dealt with at, you know, at our positions, it wasn't focused on our mental. Like you said, you know, it got to a point where they literally, you guys are waiting for them to give y'all that green light to be at home, but yet that was a quote unquote permanently home. I felt at one point when you were telling me you guys were going out to these areas for fucking ballot counts, I'm like, listen, they are putting y'all at risk to be in these crowded areas with individuals. And yet, when y'all had that COVID scare, I said, this is ridiculous. They knew the information, didn't bother to tell y'all until y'all all got there, and now wanted to say, okay, you guys have been exposed to it. That was fucked up.
Yeah, even the way the information was disseminated really pissed me off, because it was just like, there was a rumor that was happening, like somebody got a call. I was like, I don't want y'all to be upset. And then it actually led to me being upset and being really fucking pissed off, just because there were, going on those trips, there were a lot of assumptions made about the capacity people have, about what people could afford to front, right, working in the office, right? Because the expectation was you're traveling to these places and let them be a day trip, but I'm being forced to hop in somebody else's car to get to and from places. And then in regards to me even making it down there, if I decide to stay, I have to front my lodging and food costs, which is not fair to me, because that's an extra bill, you know, for you to be able to stay somewhere and have to front the cost after it's already the first of the month and most of your bills done hit. You understand what I'm saying? Right. And after moving into a new apartment in June, I had a lot of rebuilding that I needed. By the time November came, it was like, I'm rebuilding a lot. I'm trying to get a lot together for myself. And so it made me very emotional. and definitely, you know, feeling drained, because I would never forget the conversation that me and another one of my coworkers had downstairs, another brother. We had a conversation outside on the steps of the building, and we were like, how are we going to make this work? Because they talk about some 15 trips. We don't even got no damn $15 to make this work. You understand what I'm saying? And
right.
For those who have families, and for those who were well compensated, and for those who had more flexibility, them fronting the cost of, you know, lodging expenses might not be as strenuous on them as it would be on somebody like ourselves who were just starting, right? And you know, working through our money management and figuring out how to survive just living on our own. Like, it was just so many assumptions, even being able to sit for that long period of time or to show up in places, even talking about our comfort level. Like, by then, you know, Asia was gone. She was gone. You know, she found a new position, and thank God, because her having a newborn and potentially being forced to travel away from her family for the sake of a paycheck, she probably would have reached her breaking point and be like, I'm fuck this place, I'm out. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
And there were a lot of internal conversations amongst staff about how this could have been organized different. My main focus was I didn't have a vehicle, and you're asking me to travel from places, and I'm literally begging one of the leaders, who I felt like was ignoring my fucking emails, can you please make sure that I'm set up with this person? Because the other assumption was, well, get down there the way you can. I'm a new driver, right? I got my license in November of 2019. I'm really not comfortable on the highway, right? I haven't been practicing driving down that much. Like, my safety was the biggest concern, and also being able to afford my stay. Like, it was a lot, and it made me feel very insecure. And I wasn't the only person who thought about it in terms of access and assumptions being made about the capacity that people have. And I think sometimes that's the privilege of whiteness. That's the privilege of people who operate, of black bodies who operate in a white system, that, you know, people do whatever they can in order to survive. But it's also one of those things where people adapt to the same systems that are oppressive, and other people become oppressed from those same systems. And we think that that shit is normal, and it's not. And it wasn't until I found a position that cared about, you know, my mental health, that cared about me taking rest days, that really centered my work, centered my voice and my lived experience, cared about me actually becoming better as a individual and policy, then I'm just like, wow, this is what breathing feels like. This is what living should be able to feel like. This is what fluidity is. And I'm just very grateful.
It was just a move, you know, without any quote-unquote hesitation or resistance due to the color of your skin.
Yes, yes.
You know, while you were talking, I had another question for you. You know, if people didn't catch it, you were like, you guys were doing voluntold work. Not volunteer, voluntold work. I had a huge issue with that when you told me about what they were doing, what they were suggesting to do with you guys, having y'all travel throughout the state, and yet having y'all out here exposed. You know, COVID was still new.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there was things that we were still learning every day. And I was thinking in the back of my mind as you were talking about your whole experience. I'm like, yo, you were new at this moment. You were new at that period of time that y'all guys were traveling. I'm like, yo, they couldn't accommodate y'all for room and board. They couldn't accommodate y'all for transportation, knowing that a lot of y'all who are just being thrown into this doesn't necessarily know the quote unquote process of how to get to these situations, like get to these different establishments, or yet knowing how to maneuver, and you're coming out of your pocket. And like you said, first of the month, all your bills already hit. So you already tapped. Mm-hmm. So now you pulling from the inch of your ass out of nowhere, trying to make ends meet to get to these destinations was very harmful, very toxic. And when you have an establishment trying to figure out how people have this quote unquote bandwidth, or the means of having to get to one destination to the next, that was the problem for me.
Yeah.
I was not only angry for myself, but I was also angry at what you, I was also angry at what you were dealing with on your job front.
I felt so helpless. You understand what I'm saying? I literally felt so helpless.
And I couldn't understand. To me, it's still surreal what we were dealing with.
Yeah.
At that time.
And the worst in the midst of it.
COVID. Still in the midst of COVID, of course, but yet at that time it was just fresh, and yet, you know, trying to maneuver and yet doing things that we didn't desire to do, but knowing that we needed a job and the means of having a check, so we did it anyway.
Yes, it was essentially the difference between surviving.
I mean, how do you,
and thriving?
I mean, how do you feel? I'm like, you know, when you reflect back on that, what are your emotions to it?
It's the difference of surviving and thriving. You know, like, I feel like when I look back at that time, there were so many things financially that I was going through that was a crisis. You know, leaning on payday apps, trying to make things work for myself, you know, getting into that cycle, struggling with being able to balance my my finances and get back on track, right? I was cleaning up my credit and then I got access to credit. And so there were just so many things that I was trying to manage and work through and maintain, right? Because I worked very far to get to the point where I could actually open up a credit card. Like, you understand what I'm saying? Like, just understanding that history. And for me, during that time, I'm blowing up my group chat, and I'm saying, yo, there's some shit going on. I'm on the side of the road today doing some work on election day for a candidate who don't even give a fuck that they have women of color outside on the side of the fucking road, non-black women of color on the side of the road, me as a black body being on the side of the road, my other Cogley being a black body on the side of the road, and we are being harassed by Trumpers. We're being told by people in the neighborhood that we don't belong here. You know, we're stationed right next to a sheriff's office. Like, it was traumatizing as fuck to experience that before the even the traveling came. And the only thing that made me stay during that time is because I was so new, I was still accruing vacation time. And I didn't have my savings where it needed to be yet. So I was like, I can't leave. I got to do this out of survival. I got to stay out of survival. I just got to make this work. But that day really put the nail in the coffin for me that I couldn't stay there for two more sessions. Like, I would have to leave before another, round of an election season came, before the next election season, because this wasn't the work that I was going to do, just in terms of safety, just in terms of conversation. Like, I remember having a conversation with my boss, and he asked me to stay from 9 to 6 where I was at, in a rural part of Albany, and I'm like, y'all stationing people out here, but motherfuckers ain't got no car. Y'all stationing people out here, and it's getting dark outside. And, you know, we the only motherfuckers outside. You know, I had two of my colleagues leave, and I was the only one left there. I have videos of where I was located and how it really wasn't safe for me to be out there. It was just like, we do a lot of shit sometimes out of survival when really we need to be making sure, can we survive ourselves? When we need to be making sure, can we protect ourselves? Can we protect our mental? Like, I was fucked up from that. I'm still fucked up from that because I felt like it was an experience I shouldn't have had. That whole election season, that election day, I was taunted by a motherfucking Trump supporter with fucking Pence and Trump flags all over his shit. And I was being told essentially that, MAGA country nigger. That's it. That's all I was being told. MAGA country nigger. So it affected me a lot. And I think I think even to this day, I recognize that I don't ever want to have to experience trauma and worry about my survival, right, in that capacity anymore, just to be like, oh, I'm gonna make it through. No, I don't need to. We don't need to operate like that anymore. I'm gonna be able to make it through. I can be self-sustaining. I can have what I need. I don't have to be on a plantation like this just for a paycheck, because my overall mental and well-being is so much more valuable.
You know, I really, when you told me that situation that took place, I was just like, you know, the sad part about it is you got these motherfuckers out here being so cool. And yet, understanding that you were doing your position, and yet they felt so comfortable enough to show their fucking ignorance. Because you had a fucking president that was doing some shit that was like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't even fathom that. And, you know, even at my job, and yet people were bold enough to say that they voted for this dude, and yet I'm like, so basically you're okay with his fucking tantrums of what he's creating hate. He's fueling hate. You're okay with that. Now I'm looking at you differently. Even to the point where one of my coworkers told me about a conversation that was had in the break room about President Trump and everything that he was doing, and yet how they were so gung-ho for what he was doing. I'm like, you know what? I'm glad I wasn't there, because I couldn't hold my tongue with none of the shit that they were trying to be sitting there thinking that it was justifiable what was happening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, shit like that was taking place. And, you know, even not only that, we were seeing a lot of the things with still police brutality, police murders, and yet, I mean, just the way that people were sitting up there trying to justify the things that we were seeing as Black people, and we're fucking tired of. We were already on 10.
Mm-hmm.
The pot was already boiling. It was to the point where myself and a few other coworkers was just itching to have somebody to say something out the way we was going to explode. That's sad.
Yes.
We were tired. We were tired. We were not only physically tired, we were mentally tired. Not only for what we were dealing with this pandemic, but yet seeing the things that we saw with George Floyd, what we saw with Daniel Prue. There was a lot of shit that was stemming, that was really boiling, and yet people were trying to justify what we were seeing, quote unquote, or per se, and yet trying to sugarcoat the shit, and we weren't for it. And I couldn't believe just the boldness of it all in front of my face. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Now, mind you, some people knew how I was and knew I wasn't going to bite my tongue for nobody. So some of the things, whatever they probably were thinking at that moment or thought that they were going to say, they didn't say it in front of me. They said it in front of some other individuals because they felt that was their quote unquote comfort zone to say it in front of those people. But I just was like, I said to myself at that moment, dealing with what I was dealing with at that job, at that current position, I said, you know what? You guys do not give a fuck about what we are dealing with. Every single day we come up in here, every single day there's a new case of somebody who has come down with COVID. Every day the units are getting packer and packer with patients who have COVID or are on the assumption of being tested for COVID because they're showing these symptoms. And yet you are putting us all at risk. And yet, even though it was still fresh, like you said, I commend you because you and your coworker had the sense enough to put a mask on while coming to an office setting. Because obviously, we're hearing something such as COVID, we think automatically it's airborne. My first questions about this situation, about this whole COVID thing, I said, okay, first of all, is it airborne? Can we contract it through the air? Yeah, you guys are saying we can contract it person by person. Okay, but it also is it airborne?
Right.
And now, if it's airborne, okay, so what are the next steps to protect your staff members if we're coming in contact with different patients as well as staff members? I kid you not, they did not want us to wear masks. They were telling us we couldn't wear masks. It got to the point where we were disobeying the orders of those who we were, disobeying the orders of people who we were working on their unit for. Because, mind you, I worked on a surgical unit. So, obviously, we weren't having any elective surgery. So, automatically, we're not doing any pre-op work. So, they literally shut our unit down. Mm-hmm. So, now you have enough staff members, quote-unquote, in their opinion, to be utilized on other units to be helping hands. Now, mind you, if you have somebody that's new or has never worked on a med-surg floor before, mm-hmm. has never worked on a ortho floor, a vascular floor before, we are basically, quote-unquote, newbies to your system because we have never worked this type of specialty in a hospital setting. Right. So you have to treat us as if we are new employees. That shit wasn't even going forth. It saddened me because we were thrown into positions where they were automatically assuming that we knew how to operate on their units, and yet for a lot of us, we didn't. It got to a point where I literally had to tell my boss, like, listen, you're sending us on these floors and they're automatically giving us assignments of 10 patients or more. That's fucking unacceptable.
Right. Talk about it.
If we're supposed to be fucking helping hands, meaning that I am tag team with somebody that's on this floor and yet helping them in whatever it is that they may need, or yet showing me how to maneuver around their unit, I don't feel comfortable. Because now you placing 10 patients on me, which they did. They ended up placing, they ended up giving me a whole assignment. I was on 7,800. That's more so like a stroke unit. Mm-hmm. And I was with another co-worker of mine. And when the young lady gave me the whole page, I said, this is my assignment. I said, hold on, pause. I said, this, what you mean, this is my assignment? I'm like, where is the person I'm supposed to be with to end up maneuver around this unit or yet knowing how to work or whatever have you, blase, blase, blase. She said, I'm just the messenger. This is what I was told to give you guys when you guys came up on the floor. I said, okay, bet. I was closely working with my coworker because he has worked that unit before. Not a problem. I know how the basics of patient needs are when it comes to making sure that somebody needs what they need. Boom, bam, bam, whatever the case may be. But yeah, there's different tactics that each floor has, especially with dealing with stroke patients. You don't know how they're ending up, how they're feeding the patients, how they're ending up changing the patients, you know, different things like that. Even when it comes to medications, when it comes to different vitals, you know, they have to be monitored for a period of time, you know, things like that. So I literally had to tell my boss, like, you over here telling us we're going to these units and they're supposed to automatically know we're helping hands. That's not what I got when I got to that unit. I had a whole assignment. And I've never been on this unit before. And that was also strike number one for me. I said, how is it if you expect me as a healthcare provider to be on a unit and I know nothing about your fucking unit, but you expect me to hop in and yet just automatically assume that I know?
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm thinking about not only my own safety, but this patient's safety because I don't know how to operate on your unit. It was fucked up. And I guess we made enough ruckus to say, like, listen, we're not coming to these units to be given full assignments. I'm not going to do that. Either you put me with a person that's on that unit, that knows this unit, and yeah, I'm working with that person throughout my shift, or I'm not coming up in here. And if that means me sacrificing without getting paid, then fuck it, so be it. I can't tell you how many times a lot of us were being treated on these different units as if we were less than. There were some nurses that were literally leaving units because they were like the disrespect that some of these units were how they were being treated as additional helping staff was unreal.
I think what killed me the most about, like, you know, the stories that you gave me is when people were choosing non-paid days. People were choosing not to be paid over showing up into a toxic work environment where people just were being thrown anywhere because it was an all hands on deck Hunger Games situation. And some people were even being forced on COVID units where there was a lot of strain on their mental and overall physical health.
There was two nurses that I worked with who I respect wholeheartedly to this very day. One went back to her old unit, and there was just nothing but COVID patients on that unit. And she stayed there on that unit and worked that unit. And my hat could go off to her. Because every single day she had to, of course, deal with these COVID patients. She had to wear the N95 mask. She had to, of course, gear up. And yet, every single day, she was willing to deal with these patients. I can remember vividly my co-worker, Michelle. That's my girl. That's my home. That's like a sister to me. She told me, she said, Toy, she said, I went to one of those units. And she said, it was to the point where you just wish that they wouldn't prolong these people being on these machines because they look at it as if they were just so miserable. As if there was no life in them. And she said, to keep constantly going to these units and yet you trying to, you knowing that you're doing the right thing with helping, right? You know, you're just doing your job. But yet, when it's taking a toll on you and knowing that, especially for someone like myself who has a mom that is immune, who has an autoimmune disease and other different underlying health problems, God forbid I were to come home and yet bring something to her. So in my mind, dealing with patients that I knew that had COVID, I was like, look, man, I'm still trying to figure out how to maneuver around this. And yet knowing that I got to get up here, gear up, and yet anything that I happen to touch within that room has to stay all in that room. You know, this person is literally secluded. And I have to do everything at that one stop, meaning that if it comes down to changing their linen, or it comes down to getting their medication, where the nurses have had to come in with me, where they come in to get this patient food, they couldn't even use the regular tray. They had to use a paper tray. They were so isolated in this one particular room. And for y'all to sit up here and act as if everything is so cool and copacetic and thinking that we're just going to automatically hop and jump in and do this stuff, that shit took a toll on our well-being. Every day I was picking up Michelle because I told Michelle, I said, Michelle, I don't know what the fuck we're going into. Every day we go up in here and yet they're constantly giving us a new unit to go to. And it got to a point where I literally had to say, like, listen, I understand every unit that y'all guys are putting us to need helping hands. But at this moment in time, I don't think it's suitable for us to keep going to different units that we don't know nothing about. Keep us on a unit where we can at least get acclimated to that unit. So that way, once we know what to do on this unit, we won't have no problems with getting our job done.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It was so toxic. I literally had to go and speak with my nurse manager and the charge nurse for our unit. I'm like, y'all not going to these units. Y'all don't know what we're dealing with. It got to a point where I literally had to raise my voice and say that to them. I'm like, yo, y'all literally sitting up here thinking that this stuff is cool. This shit ain't cool. Every single fucking day, I can count on my fucking two hands. A lot of us were going, leaving our main home unit every single day, myself included. Every single day, going to all of these units in this hospital. And my nurse manager and my charge nurse was not leaving our home unit. Y'all don't know what we're dealing with here. Every day there's a new situation. And it's not only the COVID patients we were dealing with. There were other patients on these units that were isolated also, whether it be for CRE, VRE, C. diff, if there was a MRSA isolation, if there was any other, I can't even think right now, any other situation the patient may have been dealing with that placed them on precautions. So it wasn't only the COVID patients that were isolated, but there was those patients also too that were isolated. So that also attacks to wearing gear, you know, when it comes to doing patients who are MRSA resistant, who are CRE, VRE, or C. diff, because you also have to gear up with those type of patients also. But it's just more so extensive with patients who are COVID. But yet, listen, I wouldn't put up my worst enemy to deal with what I had to deal with at my previous job. When I tell you, when I came home, I would wake up in anger, not wanting to leave because I was so fed up. I was so tired. And it's not even emotional because I am, because I was so angry. I was like, look, I know that we are here as quote unquote frontliners, but a lot of us ain't getting the respect that we needed. Y'all want to focus on the nurses and the doctors and everything as if they're the real fucking heroes. No, it's your technicians, it's your CNAs, it's your HHAs, it's your housekeepers that are the true heroes to me. Because we're the ones sometimes seeing these patients before the nurses even get there to do what they got to do with their whole fucking assessments.
And setting the tone for how the environment should be.
Bingo.
Yes. There's so much to take in about what COVID has taught us. And I think this is why, you know, we also recognize that these jobs ain't it. People were mad that, like, you know, we had the Great Resignation episode, but people were mad that they're losing employees left and right. And it's because you're not a quality organization to work with. You're upset that you're losing people, but you're not recognizing how you play a role.
Bingo.
In your employees feeling unsafe. How you play a role and why white supremacy lives here. How your diversity and inclusion efforts are failing. They don't fucking exist. They're non-existent. They're non-existent. Y'all got all of these problems with work culture and don't want to address it. And then COVID comes and exacerbates all of the issues and fucking flipped our world upside down. Had people in bodies in fucking trailers. People being on top of each other in hallways. The whole industry of healthcare shifted. And y'all don't want to talk about how this trauma, it don't become erased overnight. No, I have screenshots of us talking to each other in the height of COVID and seeing you draped down from the head to your toe with a mask on, with a shield on. Like, it was just too much. And I recognized that there was a privilege for me to work from home. There was a privilege for me not to be on the front lines to that extent. That was a privilege. And a lot of us complained about remote work because motherfuckers was acting like that meant we have to work 24 hours. And our journey being at home was very different from those who were putting their lives on the line to serve other people.
You know, what I will say with you, I was happy that you were home. Because I knew that you were at least safe. I knew you were safe when you were home. Who I worried about was myself, my father, even my mother, even though she was a stay-at-home mom. I just knew that 2/3 of the household was going into a hospital setting.
Yep.
And we were at risk. Every day we were at risk. I don't care what we were doing, every day we were at risk. I can't tell you how close I came to people who had COVID and didn't realize they had COVID until they were going in to have surgery and we were told this person tested positive for COVID. I can't tell you how many times where I had to work a unit where I remember somebody coded and he died on the unit. I remember a lady that was in seclusion. I think she had COVID-129, which is Jesus, it wasn't COVID-19, but I think it was COVID-1. I think they tested her for COVID, and they tested her for the wrong COVID test, and it was 129 rather than the COVID-19. And yet, while they had her in isolation, her vitals started to drop. And the amount of time it took for the PA, along with the respiratory therapist, to get into the room to get this woman stats under control was so surreal to me. And even when it came down to transporting a patient into OR, if they needed to be transported into OR that had COVID, how do you safely transport a patient into surgery knowing that they have this? You know, so at least I knew you were safe to some extent. I felt helpless.
Yeah.
I didn't have no outlet at that moment to go to. So I had to just suck it up and just deal with what I had to deal with. And every day I would come into work and this, that, my whole mood. It was now just the atmosphere of the hospital alone, because they stopped having visitors come in. So it was only just the staff members and the patients that were already in the hospital, or those who were coming in due to having COVID or having procedures that were automatically emergency procedures to have done for surgery. That was it. But you can see how everybody's mood was. It was eerie. Every day we got to sit up here and deal with this. And you have to take some time away. How do you get away? You can't. Mm-hmm. Because you're a body that's existing in this position. And knowing that if you leave for a day or two, that can be money out of your hand for providing food on your table, clothes on your back, gas for transportation, anything else that you may need that money for. And I can't lie, I took an L. I did it for a whole entire day. I didn't get paid for that day. For one of the days that I just said, you know what? Y'all got me here and y'all expect me to wait to be placed onto a unit. I'm not gonna do that. I do like y'all boy even better. I'm going home. I'm out. I'm leaving. It is what it is.
Child, I think being black at work has some real implications for the way we survive, not only oppression in the workplace, but a extended oppression due to different realities we have to face working in a pandemic. And the pandemic, whether we liked it or not, exacerbated a lot of already existing issues, but really has shown us that the infrastructure of the places that we work are just not sufficient. And there are so many problems that exist and persist because people are not really choosing to work on the foundation of the issues or thoroughly address the way these challenges and the obstacles that exist contribute to a never-ending toxic work culture.
Okay. You know, I just want to ask you a question. After experiencing what you dealt with the whole traveling for the ballot counting, and yet reporting that information back to your bosses, what is their initiative to make sure that that type of situation does not happen to any other staff member in an up and coming future?
You know, I don't have an answer to that question because I'm no longer there. What I can tell you is the way they responded to it is they made sure we got 2 COVID tests. Because we were exposed to COVID, we still had to quarantine. And you know, me not being home for Thanksgiving, that shit really broke me. Because mom was experiencing some serious health issues and we could have lost mom. And so to not be there that Thanksgiving, even though they were advising people not to travel, I was going to make it come hell or high water, but I was unable to be there. And so I didn't feel like that was something I needed to voice to them, because I don't think they really recognized or really would have gave a damn, to be honest. But what I will say is, what I think they learned is they did feel bad, but they didn't feel bad enough, because even after we got out of quarantine and after Thanksgiving wrap, they asked us to return. And that November was very rough for me because I had a serious emergency outside of being exposed to COVID, but where the stress levels that I was enduring and what I went through, I had a whole body infection. I had a whole body infection that was essentially triggered by an ear infection. And I was unable to go. So as soon as they sent me an email, I said, I have a medical emergency and I am unable to go. They still wanted people to come out to count. Moving forward, you know, this is an election year. I don't know how they're going to approach things differently. I did know that, you know, because of having an election season in a pandemic, they moved to doing phone banking from the house. So they moved to do phone banking from the house instead of phone banking at like a warehouse or, you know, like a big ass office building. You were able to do it from home. I don't know how they're going to necessarily move this time around in terms of doing that type of work this year, because I'm no longer there. And I would hope that they would prioritize and learn from what happened last year to make sure that they prioritize the lives and the well-beings of their employees. But only time will tell, because I hate to say this, but the turnaround rate was really drastic. So many people have left the legislature for various reasons, but I think a lot of people were recognizing how insane that experience was for all of us, and I do think it played a heavy role. So either you make that space be more convenient, either you recognize the work that needs to be done to make it feel like a safer space, and also to really address the issues, or we're going to continue to see the same pattern. I don't know what else to say other than that, but I do know once we return back to the office, and in the moments we've returned, people were spraying down the elevators, there was more cleaning services happening, we had masks being provided to us, we had hand sanitizer and like spray. It was just like none of that really was able to trump the recycled air, because we were in buildings with recycled air where people were having, you know, having COVID. And it wasn't until we found out more cases of our colleagues having COVID that we were sent right back home. So it's just like, I think them moving forward, protection looks like being much more progressive and less regressive in your approach to how you navigate this space. Fuck what people think about, oh, y'all work for the government, y'all need to be working in a building. No, we need to be working from home. And you need to get your shit together and recognize problems that exist, because it's not fucking comfortable being in a space where the approach is more costly to the well-being of those who are employees. That's just that. I don't even know if what I said made sense, but all I do know is sign, seal, deliver, I'm gone. This was a very emotional episode. I think it triggered a lot in both of us and what we experienced, and I'm pretty sure we can more thoroughly talk about this or do not like another part two where we unpack other experiences that we had, because it's so much to chew on doing it all at once. But since I want to thank you for sharing your experiences and being transparent about some of the narratives and the things that you've experienced working in the pandemic, And I also want to thank myself, because sometimes it's hard to talk about the things we experience because we feel like we may need to go back, or, you know, we don't want to harm anybody, or we don't want to talk about what's real. We don't want to, you know, burn relationships, but really we're the ones who've been burned from what we've been through. For those of us, or for those of you rather, who have tuned into this episode, I want to thank you all for making it through. I want to thank you for listening to another episode of the Broke Black Bougie podcast. Be sure to support us by following us on Instagram at instagram.com/brokeblackbougie.com. Be sure to tap in and follow us on Facebook. Well, like us on Facebook at facebook.com/brokeblackbougie.com. Be sure to visit www.brokeblackbougie.com and sign up for the newsletter. You know, we won't spam you. It'll contain some important tips, some important, you know, updates about what's happening through the Broke Black Bougie platform. And we'll talk to you all soon. Bye.
Oh, okay. All right.
You suck, dude.